every time we get to facilitate these processes and work with all the people who want to develop it in their community. So thanks so much. And then
our next speaker, you may have heard last night, is a hypnotist. We hope he's not going to do any hypnotism this morning.
It's already too late.
Okay. Probably one of the more varied careers of our class. Started out as a doctor, tried the internet world, then moved on to consulting, now a writer.
Thanks. Classmates, thank you so much for coming. I'm honored that you all got up this early. I'd also like to thank my parents for having blasted the start to B, because that means I may have some of your attention still. All right, good deal. So I want you to imagine it's sophomore year, around November, and your first house formal is coming up. If you're a guy, you're thinking, who am I going to take? How am I going to ask her? Is she going to say yes? What if she says no? If she says no, can I ask her roommates? What are they going to do? If you're a girl, you're thinking, oh my God, formal's coming up. Who's going to ask me out? How late do I wait until I ask somebody? Is it okay for me to ask somebody out? What if I don't want to go with the guy who asked me out? How do I say no nicely? And even now, thinking about that, you may notice that that wasn't very easy. And you had zero instruction in that. And the funny thing is that it took me until I came back to Cambridge after medical school to notice that this was going on. I was a tutor in Cabot House, which is a lark, and I'd sit down to meals with these students, and all I heard about was their dating woes. Oh, you know, should I go out? And this is one date a semester that they have to worry about, and it was such an ordeal. And I'm thinking, wait a second, you're all single. You live in the same place with a whole bunch of other people who are also single. You have meals three times a day with all these people who are single. And you have classes with them too for 4 years. And this is a problem. It should not be a problem. Funny thing is, stuff that is completely abstruse and useless was not a problem, like organic chemistry. But the difference was that you were handing them a textbook and they were learning it. Harvard people are good at that. So I was thinking, what if I gave them a textbook for love? Because that would solve the problem. And the reason why this was so urgent and poignant for me was because I was that kid. Okay? I'll give you a little short version of the history of Allie's love life. Age 7, fell in love for the first time. Asked her to my birthday. She said, no! Okay. And then this revolution thing happened, and boys and girls got separated. We never saw her again. Until 30 years ago, she found me on Facebook. She liked me. But she said, no, I didn't. Age 12, fell in love with my French teacher's daughter. She was 13, way accessible. So couldn't have been the only one thing I was not familiar with. Moved to the United States for 4 years. I had a crush on this ballerina girl in high school. And for 4 years, I pined and didn't even ask her out once. And college, I had a succession of crushes, some of whom are in the audience right now. And you can all verify that I did nothing. Finally, sophomore year, I had my first kiss and ended in a disastrous breakup with 2 months of honest to godness depression, first and last time. Had that episode been for 2 months, but I came back stronger, we got back together, we broke up again this time, we did it right. med school, had my first real girlfriend, and finally age 23, lost my virginity, but just wanted to ascertain that I had no credentials, okay, none, and therefore, coming to Harvard, I'm like, okay, kids, I feel you. So, as it turns out, one of the problems that affects my target is that the idea of love and relationships, it took not a back seat, but, some reserve seat out in another stadium of the other stuff you were doing. It was as if you had this more important stuff to do, like scholarship applications, classes, essays, But as it turns out, from all these studies that have come out in the past few years, the number one determinant of your overall health and happiness in life is the strength of your intimate relationships. And there's many of those that may come in many forms, but you know, your romantic relationships really, really matter. And it turns out the biggest decision affecting your life in the long run is who you marry. So this stuff really matters, and we received no instruction in this. Mom didn't teach us, dad didn't teach us, or older siblings didn't teach us, or at least these let us. And so this is a gap. This is a gap in learning, and compared to the number of organic chemistry textbooks, there had to be at least one textbook to lead us in this area of life. Okay? So so what did I do about this? So thanks to the internet, my cousin found some resources. He said, dude, check this out. I read this. I'm like, this has a ring of truth. So I basically learned the same way you learn from, you know, from a textbook, any other thing, and stuff started to work. Like, this is great, and this is much easier than I thought. And in retrospect, if you think about it, there are a lot of boneheads out there who are doing just fine with their love lives, and all these smart people were not, so it couldn't be that hard. So, so I did this thing in Cabot House. I was a tutor there. It was their senior year, and it was a felicitous day. It was 4/20/01. Some of you may or may not know what this thing is in 420s, but it was a nice aromatic day, and I got together a bunch of kids in a nice little room in the cabin, and I called it the Harvard Underground, the Harvard Underground Seminar for Successful Intercourse. And intercourse meaning social, of course, I don't know what you guys are thinking, but I still got in some mild trouble with the house master at the time, who's a great guy, a very good fellow. So it was a hit. In 36 hours, kids came back with the results like, dude, that worked. I'm like, what the hell? So anyway, and to think that you have to go through 28 years of pain in order to get to there, you know, it just broke my heart. But no longer. So these are skills. You can learn these skills, and it's not really all that many kinds of skills. And so what I did was, you know, I of course took off and meandered into other things. I went off to Cambridge, got a 1-year drinking degree, which is a lot of fun. I highly recommend if you have the time and money. And then I came back and worked in consulting because I thought I was going to make drugs and things and be a productive member of society as a corporate drone, which did not suit me apparently. So I said, okay, entrepreneur boy, if you're serious about this, put your money where your mouth is and start this. And I had a friend actually who had started writing ebooks. It's an ebook in 2005, but he was making millions of dollars and like, he can do it, I can do it. You see the theme here? Okay, so I wrote this ebook called The Dao of Dating, The Thinking Man's Enlightened Guide to Success with Women, and I sold it for $70, and the crazy thing was, people bought it. That is the price of desperation, apparently. So, I'm like, well, this is working. So, okay, it seemed only fair to write the one for women. Now, that one was easy to write, because I kind of had it all in my head, and there was a deadline. Deadlines. Really sharp resolve. So the deadline was September 1st. There was going to be a launch. And by the way, 2020 asked me to be on their show. I don't know how they found it. They found it. They said, we really like your style. So they were speaking. Why don't you come on our show? And you guys would appreciate this. I hadn't told my mom that I could be Kinsey. And for a Christian parent, this is like major. It's like, wait, you quit medicine? So I said no to 2020 because I had this image in my head of mom like flipping the channel. I was like, wait, what? He's writing books on how men can get laid? What is this? He's my son. What have you done to me? So one of the biggest regrets of my life. So anyway, and so I wrote that, and then I started writing a book for women, and I thought this is going to be a piece of cake, but there was no deadline, and also I'm not a woman. So that took 3.5 years instead of 3 months. It was a painful process, but it's done, and it's available. In fact, I have four copies with exactly four in there in my class, so there you go. I count them last time, so... that's a lot of story. We can give you some useful content hopefully as well. So what's the idea? The idea is this whole book series is about who you really are as opposed to who you think you are, and what truly fulfills you as opposed to what you think fulfills you, and how to actually get that stuff as opposed to how you think you get that stuff. So who you really are So you started out as one cell. That one became two, became four, became eight, became 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1024, 2048, 4096. Your eyes are already glazing over. I want you to go on for 5 more minutes just at that speed to get to 7 trillion. And that's how many cells you have. And if 535 people in the U.S. Congress can't get along, imagine 7 trillion of them, and yet your cells do get along. You slept through the night, you weren't involved in it, your heart kept on beating, you're breathing right now, you're not involved in that. Everything is working. You are a miracle. You've also avoided any number of homicidal bus drivers, crazy cabbies. You made it to here, yet another miracle. Okay, so what is a miracle? To me, a miracle is something that's incredibly likely and yet still happens. That would be you. And another way of saying miraculous is the divine. So suddenly it doesn't sound so hokey and woo anymore, but that is what you are. And that's in the Tantric tradition, in the Hindu tradition, they say you are the incarnation of the divine. And that's what you are. And 7 trillion is on the order of the magnitude of a galaxy. We got the number of stars in a galaxy is about 100 billion or more. There's about 100 billion galaxies out there. So, you know, you can think of yourself as a galaxy of cells, all kind of working together. And if you've ever looked up at the night sky in a place where you can actually look up at the night sky, like Los Angeles, you will see the galaxy with these vast, amazing things, right? Are there any puny galaxies? No, there are no puny galaxies. Therefore, there are no puny people, okay? So you are that galaxy. But in addition to that, every other person you meet is also a galaxy. So that kind of increases your appreciation of other people. There's 7 billion of them, but that doesn't make any one person any less miraculous. Okay, so keep that in mind. No puny galaxies, no puny people, and most of them certainly no puny you. So that's who you really are, okay? Now, what do you really want? What you really want is this thing I call fulfillment. And fulfillment is a set of feelings, right? Fulfillment is not a person. And many of you who have gone through divorce number one and divorce number two by now may have noticed the phenomenon of the checklist spouse. You have this checklist, you check them off, it's like, this guy's perfect, all right, let's do this thing. And yet it doesn't work out. How dare they, right? But the idea is that what really fulfills you is different from what you think fulfills you. And so what you want to look for in a relationship is the feelings, is the idea of, do I have a companionship or not? And I think the best, most accurate measure of whether you're in a relationship is, am I growing? Am I a better version of myself around this person? And am I serving the world in my own capacity? And if you have that, keep going. And if you don't, please reconsider, because life is far too precious to waste with someone who brings you down. You have a gift to give to the world. That's why you're here. So if somebody's slowing that down, that person is depriving the entire planet of their gift. And that's probably totally not fair. Okay. And also one more thing. So in this cohort, we are optimizers. We are maximizers. Okay. And we like to, you know, make everything the best possible. So go for satisfying as opposed to optimizing. Satisfying means you take the first thing that actually works for you and you go with it, as opposed to trying to make an exhaustive search of the space, which is never really possible. And finally, how to get. I'll speed up this back to the last part because we don't have time. But the idea is that instead of asking the world to conform to your wishes and say, why does not the world make me happy? Why do they all have to be married and gay? What's up with that, right? The fact is there is abundance, and you have a lot of opportunity love out there. There's tons and tons of people. And you have to remember your gift. You have to remember your power. And your power is to elevate, ennoble, and enrich lives of people around you with a look, with a smile, with a touch. You look fantastic. I really appreciate that thing you did. Wow, that's amazing. This actually helps you feel great because of the way we're built. So you know, when you make somebody else feel great, you feel great. And when you do that, you start to glow. When you start to glow and be bright, people want to be around light sources. So keep on doing that. And then I just want to say that, you know, my current title is happiness engineer. So the three practices I want you to do are gratitude, compassion, and mindfulness. So be grateful for the fact that you are a miracle right here. Be mindful of the fact that, hey, this is great. Feel your feet, feel your breath, and also compassion. We are all embedded in these deep networks of humanity. You know, nobody is an island. You're all here because of everybody pulling together, road somebody else built, school somebody else built, and the fact that we all support one another. So remember that, have compassion, feel engaged, and have fun. Thank you.
Ten minutes exactly.
That's great.
Thank you.
That's really good.
I was struck at the incident how many times people who are educated
people who talk, people who are in education, got applause, a standing ovation. And I'm also struck by teaching here in my world how few people should go into education and how few people have made an education in their life. A lot more happy, one of our classmates.